Your Mom Has a Blog, the podcast. I don't know what episode this is, do you know?
Episode 5.
This is episode number 5. And we took last week off.
We did.
But we're back now with a vengeance. So welcome to the podcast. I'm Chad Edgington.
I'm Melissa Edgington.
And we're going to talk about a few things that will be of probably at least marginal interest to people who listen. So we're excited about that. And Melissa... You want to go ahead and why don't you give us a preview, a rundown of what we're going to be talking about?
Well, we're going to talk about Chad's embarrassing moment. I'm looking forward to this one.
I had an embarrassing moment today.
And we're going to be talking about the gorilla.
Okay.
A little bit.
I'm burnt out on the gorilla. You can talk about that one. What else?
And then we're going to talk about women who wish their wives were spiritual leaders, because we're going to get a man's take on that.
On women who wish their wives were...
Oh, no.
What is it
now? I actually wrote that down. Women.
That's like a whole other issue we have now in America.
I meant women who wish their husbands were spiritual leaders.
There we go.
Okay, so school's out for summer.
Okay, so you're excited about that?
Yeah, aren't you?
I mean, I like it better when everybody has to wake up early. Because it's like y'all can share the joy of that with me.
I like no schedule.
Yeah, I
know. But I don't think all moms have no semblance of a schedule in summer the way I do.
Yeah, it's out of control.
I don't think we've gotten these kids in bed before 10 since the last day of school. Have we?
I don't know. I don't do bedtime.
You shouldn't admit that on a podcast.
Shouldn't admit that, yeah.
You do plenty of other things to make up for the fact that
that's right.
You don't do bedtime.
That's right. I'm here.
You're here. That's all that matters. So, Chad, do you have any favorite summertime memories from when you were a kid?
Well, we just go to the lake. I like to go to the lake, and I remember we would make up plays in the garage and invite our parents, you know, with all the neighborhood kids. We would race bikes and go fish for crawdads. And, you know, we there was this one time where we had to get this fence painted.
and you tricked other kids in the neighborhood?
Yeah, and I was like selling chances for them to paint the fence for a little while. It was more, really,
so
more or less whitewashing the fence.
That was so clever of you.
That was such a great memory. And we would sneak on the steamboats. We would ride up and down the Mississippi from Hannibal to wherever they would take us.
Wow, that sounds magical.
Yeah, it was really magical.
It sounds almost like something Mark Twain would dream up.
Yeah, so do you have any good memories?
Oh, I've got tons of good memories. But I remember, you know, I'm...
What, true stuff?
Listen, yeah, this is actually true. I'm not much of an outdoorsy kind of gal. Never have been, but I grew up out in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summertime, we would go down on the place, you know, is what you call it.
Going down on the place, yeah.
And we would spend all day by the tank. We would fish. I would lay out there on a blanket in the shade with a bunch of sunscreen on because I've got red hair and read books. And it was just fantastic. We would play in the mud when it rained. And,
mm-hmm.
and then we would always come home and our parents would check us for ticks. That honestly happened.
Yeah, that's good. A tick check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were living out a country song.
Was there ever a time where they found a tick?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because ticks, you know, would be in the trees and they would. That's what I always thought. Are ticks in trees?
I don't know. I've never had a
tick. I thought they were just dropping on my head from trees. I don't know.
I think they're in the grass, but I don't know much about ticks.
I don't know. I haven't had to deal with a tick in many years. Thank heavens.
Yeah.
So I'm just dying to know, what's your embarrassing moment from today?
The embarrassing moment. All right. Well, being a pastor is one of those things where you always carry around guilt that you should be doing better. You understand that feeling I have?
Yeah. That's how mothers feel. All
right. So pastors pastors feel the same way. Is that there's always so, you know, you get busy doing a lot of stuff. For instance, today there were a lot of things that I could have done, and for the morning was really great. I do a little music camp with the kids. It's sort of like an extra few days of Bible school, and we get together and sing songs, and we learn the Vacation Bible School music and the motions, and then I teach them some folk songs and some Christian songs, and then I also share the gospel with them. So that was a good way to start the day off and good morning. And then the big project that we had decided we were going to do was that we weren't really able to get our Vacation Bible School information out to the kids the way we normally do that through the school. And so what we've learned is you can do direct mailing through UPS. And who learned all this for us?
No, not UPS, USPS.
USPS, USPS.
Oh, it was me.
Yeah, and Melissa spent the better part of a day figuring out that we were not going to be able to print off these on Vistaprint and take them to the post office. And so I said, hey, that's no big deal. We can make 1,000 postcards at the office. And little did I know that that was going to be an hours-long project. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of those things that you just wind up doing, you know, and helping. We have a great secretary, Sandy Grubbs, who is a faithful listener to the podcast. A little voice there for you.
You're so hilarious.
And Sandy said, let's do this. And she worked really hard. And so we were cutting the postcards, and we had figured out this way to put the cardstock in where it wasn't giving an error message every 5 seconds. And anyway, it took forever. But that's just one of those things that you wind up doing these little things, and you always think, well, I should be reading my Bible. I should be praying for the people. I should be out visiting. You know, I should be doing something else than what I'm doing. And usually you have that feeling that there's always something better you could be doing. And, you know, you have to learn to delegate, and you have to learn all these different things. So this is all kind of the lead up to the embarrassing moment.
Okay. So far I've heard nothing embarrassing.
Okay.
Do you hear Emerald calling me?
Yeah. What do you want to do about it? Just want to tell her to be quiet for a minute?
I don't know. I don't know if that'll work.
Okay. You want me to tell her?
She's saying, Mama, I need to tell you something.
Yeah. What is she? And it's usually just like, I need you, right?
Right, I want you.
I want you. I need you. Yeah. So let me try to get the... Okay, there she is again. Hold on a minute, okay? We're doing a podcast. Just give me 1 minute. Or 7 or something, okay? Yes. Okay, she agrees. All right. So what we're doing, what happened is Lonnie Wells gave me a text and said one of our widows is in the hospital. And this one of the oldest ladies in our church is just a great lady. And, you know, she's gotten to the point where she's not able to get to church as much as possible. What's so sweet about her is she has, in the recent past, in the last few months, when she hasn't been able to come to church. Now, mind you, this woman is 99 years old. She calls me and she apologizes for missing church and says how bad she really wants to be there. But, you know, she just can't walk without a walker and so on. And so I'm always just amazed at she's a sweet lady. But, you know, when you get 99, you know, sometimes...
It's harder to come to church.
And you forget things. You get a little bit forgetful. So this is part of the story.
Oh, okay.
All right. So Lonnie says...
This is the longest, most embarrassing moment story.
Yours was really long,
ever.
Too. All right. Hold on. It's worth it. So anyway, Lonnie says, she's in the hospital. Get up there. So he didn't say it like that, but he sent me a text message wanting me to give a visit. So I think that's a great thing to do. I'm going to go up there, and I'm going to see her and visit with her and pray with her. And so I get in the truck, go up there. And I see that there's another woman in the room with her. So they've got a lot of people at the hospital, and so they've had to double up on some rooms. And so I walk in there, and I'm just cheerful, happy, smiling. I'm, you know, probably feeling proud of myself, like, and because there's like this spectator in the room, I'm trying to make a really great hospital visit because there's someone watching the whole thing.
You've got an audience.
I have an audience. So like, that's, you know, I love an audience. So I'm thinking, oh, how are you doing? It's so, now, what are you doing in here? What's going on? Are they going to let you go today? And she said, well, I mean, your guess is as good as mine is while I'm in here. And, you know, she didn't know exactly what was going on either. And so this lady's watching, and she's watching me do the hospital visit. And after about 10 minutes of me making small talk and trying to be nice, the woman who I went to visit, you know, and I've been in her house a few times and all this, she looks at me and she says, who are you? And that really blew my routine there.
Did the other lady laugh?
I don't know. I was just, I was so embarrassed. I wasn't embarrassed. But what wasn't embarrassing that she didn't know who I was, because, I mean, that's okay. I can understand. But it's just that I was really priding myself on, like, being this awesome pastor. And I was sitting here. This is how what a much of a sinner I am. I was sitting there thinking, I bet that lady over there, I bet she really wishes I was her pastor, because here I am at the hospital, and, you know, I come in with my Vacation Bible School t-shirt on and my blue jeans, and I was thinking I was awesome, and the lady said, who are you? You know, and I said, well, I'm your pastor. And then once she, you know, it took a few minutes, but then she thought I was working there or something. And then, you know, so she thought I was a doctor or a nurse or something. But after, then she said, oh, you're Chad. Oh, come sit down here by me. And then she patted me on the leg. And I could tell she felt bad that she wasn't quite sure who I was. But I felt bad because I was really priding myself on how awesome I was. And then I got put right in my place. So
God has ways of knocking you down a peg.
Knocking you down, way down. So that was kind of an embarrassing moment. It wouldn't have been so bad, but I was glorying in myself.
How much you want to bet the lady who's in the room with her told that story later?
That she told what? That
she witnessed that whole scene.
And she didn't even know who the pastor was. Yeah. Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah. So that's an embarrassing moment. Then I had another embarrassing moment at the... I've been trying to keep track of them. Like I said, it happens so frequently. That I was out there helping the youth. We had all these. Chick-fil-A will do a thing where you can sell sandwiches. So they ran up to Chick-fil-A, the youth minister's wife, and got 500 Chick-fil-A sandwiches and brought them back, and we sold them in Olney. And we had a trailer out there. We had like the First Baptist Olney trailer sitting out at the old savings and loan park. I can't do it on the spot. I'll tell you what, Mary. We parked a big trailer there at the Savings and Loan parking lot. I can't do it. A big, beautiful Savings and Loan. All right, so we parked the trailer at Savings and Loan, and then CJ unhooked the trailer from the Suburban. And then I sat on the edge of the trailer, and it tipped over, and all the kids laughed at me. And I thought, here I am, you know, trying to be this cool pastor helping with the Chick-fil-A sale. And the trailer nearly tips over, and they all laughed at me.
And you're doing Trim Healthy Mama.
Yeah, I'm a Trim Healthy Mama. That's like the only thing I've got going for me right now.
And your Jimmy Stewart impression.
I say, what do you want, Melissa? You want the moon? That's terrible, right? I don't know if it's the headphones. I can't do it with the headphones on.
The expression you get on your face.
I wish people... I lost on the moon for you. You see? Zuzu's petals. Emerald's listening. She's like, this is what I'm waiting on? His terrible Jimmy Stewart impression?
My goodness.
Yeah. So that's my embarrassing moment.
I love that one. That's good.
And scene. Okay, what else do you want to talk about?
Okay, shifting gears to
Harambe.
Is that how you say it?
I don't know.
Harambe. That sounds African. Isn't he from Africa?
I don't know. That's where I think gorillas are.
Well, anyway, so of course everyone's heard the story of the four-year-old who fell in the gorilla exhibit at the Cincinnati Zoo, and then the gorilla had to be shot. And there's been so much, I mean, I'm really practically burnt out on the topic as well. Everything that can be said has been said, I think. Mm-hmm. But I wanted us to touch just briefly on the idea that I've seen today of people calling the killing of the gorilla murder.
Yeah, I saw something.
So they're putting...
It's on Drudge. Drudge said it was a murder.
They're putting the killing of that animal, however wonderful that the animal was, on the same level as a killing, the killing of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us a little bit about that, Pastor. Why is it that the commandment, thou shalt not murder, does not apply to Harambe, the gorilla?
Okay. That's a really hard question, Melissa. But I'm going to try to answer that. Why does the killing of the animal not constitute murder? I think you got to get down to the fact that humans and other animals are different. The human is a unique creation. It's a special creation. And what separates us from the animals, I would say, a couple of things. For one, we have, depending on how you divide up the human being, you know, body, spirit, soul, or if you think the soul and the spirit are the same thing, there's some part of a human being that has been given this spirit or soul, I would say spirit, that is able to relate to God in a way that other animals, other creation is not able to do. So for one thing, we are different. That distinction has to be made. And also, we are made in the image of God. We share attributes with God that other animals and other creation do not share. And so the human life is special. And that doesn't mean, though, the fact that we say, hey, the human life has a certain worth because we're made in the image of God and we can relate to God. That doesn't mean, though, that we don't experience sorrow over the fact that that gorilla, you know, was put down. I think it's sorry that the gorilla was even in a zoo. You know, I mean, I like to go look at the animals in the zoo, but when you think about it, I mean, that's...
I saw the point made today, though, that if he hadn't been in the zoo, then he wouldn't exist because that species would be extinct if they weren't...
Okay.
Keeping them going in a habitat like that.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, I think we could recognize it's good. I mean, I don't know what the purpose of killing those animals are unless they're a danger to villages or something like that. But that's beyond. I don't know the answer to that. But I can tell you that whenever people are trying to make this sort of equivalency between that animal and the life of the four-year-old boy, can you imagine the sorrow if it was reversed and the ape had lived and the gorilla had lived and the boy had been killed?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we would be just, you know, it would be worse. And yet it's still a sad thing that the gorilla lost its life. It's just an unfortunate thing. It's not really anybody's fault. The zoo probably, I was thinking the zoo should have had a better enclosure, but then I looked at the video and some pictures of that enclosure, and it looks like, you know, there's just no way that a person could get down there. And it's huge, and it seems like even the gorilla shouldn't have been able to get down there. But the boy, as you made the point, probably was trying to just get a better look,
mm-hmm.
and was trying to get a, you know, crawl through there to be closer to the gorilla, and he didn't realize how dangerous that gorilla was, and his mother, you know, just take, when you're at the store, you know, and you turn around and the child's gone and, you know, they're 2 or 3 feet away and you've lost them. And mm-hmm. so if you've been in that situation, you realize how easy it is just for a split second to lose track of the child. And, you know, it's just a terrible thing. But I think if people would maybe keep a perspective on it and realize we don't understand everything that was happening at that moment, then, you know, I think that would lead to a little better understanding.
I saw there was even a hashtag that was started today that is hashtag I've lost my kid. It's kind of as a show of support for the mother that it can happen to anyone.
My mom used to lose me on a regular basis. I mean, I started to think it was intentional. I mean, how many times can you be left at daycare?
She did not. No, I'm serious. That happened like twice.
Yeah, you turn around, you're on a carnival ride, and then your parents are gone. That happened to you. Well, you see, that's a little unusual. Yeah, I think she's getting restless. Well, let's. What else have you got there?
Okay, I've got one more thing. One more thing, and then
we've got to get this baby to bed.
Okay. So this week I had a.
Hold on, just a minute. We're almost done.
I had a blog post that was about women who wish their husbands were spiritual leaders, and kind of the gist of the post, I was just thinking about how. I was really thinking about how much that you hate to be told what to do.
That's true.
You really do. Like the other day, he was leaving to go someplace and he was wearing a shirt that I didn't think he should wear. And it was just kind of amazing how much you hated it that I was saying you shouldn't wear that shirt. Yeah. And did you change?
No.
No, of course not.
It was a yellow shirt. It said, don't. Bro me if you don't know me. And I think that's funny because at church I go by Brother Chad. And so it's like, don't bro me if you don't know me. And then I got to where I was going, which was to the refuge. And there was a kid there that was wearing a shirt that was a Christian t-shirt with Jesus on the front of the shirt. And it said, don't bro me if you don't know me. So that was kind of what I had. That my shirt was kind of Christ-like. But we stood together, and I took his picture, and I said, you know, your shirt's a Christian shirt, and my shirt is kind of a bad attitude, but...
That's what I thought. Yeah. When I saw your shirt, I thought, you look like a punk teenager.
There you go.
But anyway, that's all beside the point. The point is that...
Yeah, what's the point of that? I'm glad you got to take a few minutes on the podcast to criticize me. Thanks for being such a super judger.
I was super judging your t-shirt. I don't like that shirt.
Yeah, you should stow and go that.
Hey, by the way, we didn't talk about the fact that we got a new minivan.
Got a new Chrysler Town and Country.
Well, it's not new.
It's new to you. It's new to us. Me. New to us.
And it's awesome.
It's so awesome.
And it's got stow and go.
And we didn't have to go up to stow and go. We kept all the awesomeness of the minivan.
The only thing it's missing is the heated
seats. Didn't have his heated seats, but we didn't have to sell out and get an SUV like you wanted.
Right. Here's what I've determined, that to drive a minivan, you really have to just know that you are cool enough to pull it off.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I am, you know, 38.
Yeah, it's cool like me wearing, when I wear Lee jeans, you know?
Right.
You got to be Lee's. Comfortable to say, you know, I don't have to wear Levi's.
Hey, you were wearing Lee's when you were 9?
My grandma sewed Lee jeans.
And you're wearing them at 41.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, for me, it's going back home.
It's kind of like you went full circle.
I went full circle on Lee jeans.
And then eventually you can just go back to the overalls.
I don't know if I ever had those.
Oh, yeah, when you were 2.
We had Lee overalls?
Well, you know, you had overalls, and then when you get to be an old man, then you have the belly, and you got the overalls. Yeah.
I had the belly.
You had it?
Well, I still have a little bit of a belly.
No, no, you don't have a belly. I just didn't understand what you said. I'm not trying to say you have a belly.
I mean, I can live with that.
No, you look good. You're a trim, healthy mama.
I'm a trim, healthy mama with a small belly. I still got a little jiggle.
Dad bod.
The dad bod. Mushy and lumpy in all the right places. Pasty white, a little bit hairy.
So, where was I going with it? Oh, we were talking about...
You were just talking about what a jerk I am. No, creep I am.
I just don't like that one shirt, that's all. But anyway.
I like that shirt. It's like the only thing I have in my closet that's slightly rebellious. you know.
And that's why you like it.
That's why I like it.
So I was talking in this blog post about how we as women have a tendency, you know, when we see that our husbands are not living up to their potential as spiritual leaders in the home, we have a tendency to nag. I mean, I hate to even use that word because I hate it when someone says that I'm nagging.
And I'm the only person that ever says it. So thank you again, Super Judger.
You're feeling very sensitive tonight.
Well, you're really, I mean, I opened up with these embarrassing moments, no, and it's like you're piling on.
I think that your experience at the hospital has really hurt your confidence.
Who are you? Yeah, I know. Go ahead.
Just you know. Just
so what's the question, though?
Know who you are in the Lord.
I do. I'm there.
Okay, so my question is what do you think it is that wives can do, or why is it that nagging doesn't work? What can women do to encourage their husbands in their spiritual walk instead of, you know, basically we have a tendency to criticize more than encourage. And sometimes we think we're encouraging and the husbands hear it as criticism.
Yeah. It sort of goes back to what I was saying about being a pastor. It's probably the same thing about being a dad or a father. Is you never really feel like you're doing a great job. And probably, like you're saying, mothers feel the same way. So we're all extremely sensitive. And last night, I really enjoyed our drive back home from our little getaway. I was really sweet. And
are you being swanny?
I think I was a little swanny.
Dennis Swanberg,
yeah,
y'all.
Yeah, Swanberg, yeah. The Googling. Minister of Encouragement. And we saw him. We saw him last year.
Yeah,
it was really awesome.
He was really funny.
Yeah, we'd always kind of made fun of him, and then we saw him, and he like brought us to tears. And we laughed, we cried, we bonded, we held hands, we renewed our vows, just sitting right there in his performance.
We were actually not even sitting next to each other.
Oh, we weren't.
I was at the back of the room.
But all I could think about was you the whole time.
That experience meant a lot to you.
It meant
a
lot to me. I don't remember it, but it was awesome. Yes. I just thought he was really funny.
He was funny.
And so, where were we? Oh, yeah. So on the way back, after we played some mini golf, I bought a Tim Keller book called The Meaning of Marriage, and we were reading The Meaning of Marriage. And really, I think what he was talking about was how we expect our spouse to really fulfill all these deep needs that we have, you know, for ourselves. And so instead of looking to fulfill someone else's needs, and instead of looking at marriage, what Keller was saying, as sort of a duty or something that we're commanded by, you know, by God to do as obedience, in, you know, having being a good husband, being a good father, we expect parents to bring us all this fulfillment. And somehow, as when we were reading that, I was thinking, you know, that's really coming out of youth group culture, which we don't want to go too hard on that. We talked about that some last night on the way home. That would have been a good podcast, right? Our little discussion. I'm trying to recreate it here, but
future podcast.
As we were driving back home, and I thought, you know, it seems like when we were in college, there were all these guys that they really talked a good game. And they seemed really spiritual, and they knew how to, I would say they really were pretty good at manipulating girls into going on dates with them and thinking that they were awesome. And then you had what I would consider the guys who were, you know, my friends. We weren't really good at talking that game as though we were just, you know, God's gift to Christian women. I think we knew that we had a lot of flaws and we had a lot of problems and we weren't perfect and we didn't, you know, we were trying to be honest about it. And we joke about those guys. We call them super godly guys. So we weren't the super godly guys, and we knew we weren't super godly because we knew we were a bunch of sinners. And so, you know, you just kind of, even when you get married, you think, gosh, you know, I could be doing a lot better. I could be, you know, leading in multiple ways. Then you even become a pastor and you think, well, I still could be a better husband. I could be a better father. I could be a more spiritual leader in the home. And I guess what I would say to women that want their husband to be a spiritual leader is first kind of realize what a really hard thing it is to be spiritual in the first place. Then think about how hard it is to when you feel like you're a failure and a hypocrite, to say, okay, we're going to do this now. I mean, it's just like if anybody else was trying to lead. Leadership is really hard. And so I don't know how, I think your question was, how would you encourage, what would you do, how can a wife encourage her husband to be a spiritual leader? And, you know, I think to be patient, to be encouraging, just in you know, if he's interested in something that is spiritual in nature, he wants to do something, you know, I don't even know what that could be. Buy a book, listen to a sermon, you know, like what you were doing last night. I'm sure it's not the most fun thing to do to read a book out loud, you know, while somebody's driving. There was other things that we could have done. But that was something that really, in that moment, it was like a spiritual thing that we were able to do together to think about marriage.
Right.
And so, you know, I thought your blog post was good, you know, and just talked about the things that you could do. I don't know, I don't really know if I could really add to that except to say that really being patient and being understanding and what a difficult thing it is. And when I say being patient, I mean, you know, it's going to be lots of tiny steps towards that. And I think you wake up in 5-10 years and you say, wow, he's really grown as a Christian. He's really grown as a leader. He's really totally different than he was 15 years ago. So that's how I feel about myself. I feel like, gosh, I've really changed. And it's taken a long time. So think about it it's a long game. It's not something that your husband's not going to turn into Billy Graham overnight. So you give that lots of time. And don't put up a fight if he wants to go to church. Don't make it seem like giving or helping people or doing something that's sacrificial or something he could do, don't make it seem like that's putting you out. If that's what you really want, then whenever he shows some spiritual interest, go with it, you know. And don't create friction there when just because maybe it seems inconvenient or it's not your idea of what you thought the super godly guy should be doing and the things he should be interested in the Lord. It may look a little bit different, but go with what it is. Is that helpful?
Right. Yeah, definitely. And I think that as women, we have to remember that we have our own issues, you know, and it's easy for us to think, well, I can see what he should be doing. Why doesn't he just do it? Well, he can see the same thing in you in a lot of areas as well. So marriage is a long exercise in being patient and showing grace and just praying for your spouse and letting God do the work. You can't change them, but God can.
Yeah, that's probably the main problem is that you take that on as a project. And that's where a lot of people are unequally yoked because they think, well, I can create that person in my image. I can recreate them. And well, actually, that's what God does. God does the recreating in his image. You don't do that. And, we're going to look like Jesus. That's the goal. It's not for your wife to just act like you or for you to act like your wife. It's for both of you to grow in Christ. And we talk about it all the time, how we're such different people than we were 17 years ago when we were married. But we've grown closer to Christ. We're more understanding of what Scripture is teaching us about who God is. And as we grow in the knowledge of Christ and we understand who God is and what he does and what he desires and wants from our lives, as we grow towards him, we grow together. And that's important thing. That's an important thing to remember. And that has taken years and years and years. And so be patient and be loving. And like the book we were reading yesterday, the Keller book, it's called The Meaning of Marriage. It says, hey, you know what? Most marriages, even if they go through a season where you think it's bad, it gets better if you hang on. And I thought that was really encouraging.
It was.
And so you hang in there. Especially if your marriage is something that you're thinking, man, this is not what I thought it was going to be, or you're disillusioned, don't quit and don't get up, because it's going to give up. It's going to get better. And so if you hang in there and you are trusting God, you know, now, of course, there are circumstances where it may not get better. I think he said 2/3 of the marriages got better. So there's always going to be those that you get into a situation where you're in danger or you're being abused or something like that. You got to get out. That's not healthy. That's not, God doesn't expect you to stay in a relationship where you're being abused. And so you can't, you know, two people can't live together if one person's beating the other person. That's just not going to work. But if they're willing and there's problems, you need to be in counseling and these sorts of things. And it's always good to go to a pastor or a counselor and just talk out these problems. And you say, hey, you know, we need to work on this, or we need to work on this. Get some tools. You'd be amazed at what's out there. We can tell you about the time we went to a marriage conference. We might have already mentioned that. Have we talked about that before?
I don't remember.
I don't remember if we have or not. We talk so much.
Oh, yeah. We talked about reflective listening.
Yeah, reflective listening. We went to the marriage conference and we learned so much. But alas, we must stop talking.
Yes, we must.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed our fifth episode. And we'll try to be more consistent in our podcasting. Not to skip weeks.
We only missed 1 week.
Just missed a week.
It was the last week of school.
Yeah, I just didn't feel like podcasting that day.
Yes, I
was
remember.
I was not, you know, I've got to really be psyched up for it.
Yeah.
So, but after today, when I had that moment in the hospital, I thought, tonight's podcast night. Good. Well, thanks for listening to Your Mom Has a Blog, the yourmomhasablog.com. podcast, or is it just the Your Mom Has a Blog podcast?
That's it.
So we'll see you on the blog. Look forward to reading what else Melissa comes up with this week that will be brilliant and enlightening and super judging. So for signing off, this is Chad Edgington saying so long.
This is Melissa Edgington, super judger.
See you next time.
Bye.